Welcome to the Unhooked Podcast, hosted by author, writer, and recovery advocate Annie Highwater. This is a podcast of real conversations and true stories from those who have been affected by and overcome adversity. Each episode will tell real, raw, sometimes unbelievable stories, opening up the lives of a variety of guests, as well as your host. You will hear stories of despair, recovery, and triumph from people who have risen from or are making their way through wilderness experiences. The goal of the Unhooked Podcast is to take a deep, productive look into topics related to addiction, alcoholism, grief, mental and emotional health, family dysfunction, codependency, conflict, and other types of affliction. The good, the bad, the dramatic, the real life stuff that all of us face. You will hear wisdom and hope from people who are fighters, who fought to persevere through bewildering circumstances and difficult obstacles. You can contact Annie by emailing annieunhooked@gmail.com. And now, enjoy the show.
I am super excited just to get right into this week's conversation. I have asked and been given the great privilege of having a conversation with Daphne Willis, who is honestly one of my favorite singers. I watch her all the time, mostly on YouTube or when I'm in my car. Let me introduce her as somebody who's been collaborating across multiple genres, ranging from roots rock to pop to hip hop and electronic dance music. Classifying Daphne Willis in musical terms is really no easy task. With infectious melodies delivered with lyrical precision and honesty, and really there's so much depth to her lyrics and her songs. The songs and performances are sincere, compelling, and honestly, they're truly relevant. She was raised in Chicago. Daphne now calls Nashville, Tennessee home, and influences as varied as Elvis, Costello, and Michael Jackson. But her musical output cleverly incorporates such inspirations into a style that is refreshing and contemporary in a way that suits her songs best. Really, she's got a style all her own. With over 1,000 shows under her belt over the past several years, Daphne has been spreading her music to passionate fans across the United States and beyond, I believe. Her infectious personality combined with her incredible talent caught the eyes and ears of Sony ATV Music Publishing in early 2016. They quickly signed Daphne to a worldwide publishing agreement, and this partnership has resulted in several of her songs being recorded by other artists and used in commercial film and TV productions such as One Tree Hill, Empire, and a Microsoft ad campaign. But because I have personally been touched by her music, and in particular one song called Somebody Someone, which has become somewhat of an anthem for those of us who have loved ones that have been gripped by addiction, I invited Daphne on to share her story and explain her work. So with that said, thank you so much for coming on and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here and just excited always to be involved in anything that, you know, fights the stigma and raises awareness. So thank you for doing what you do.
Oh, thank you and welcome. And I know you've been traveling a little bit. So if I could just open the microphone up to you and you could kind of tell us your background and what brought you forward to doing the work you do and particularly that song.
Sure. I grew up in Chicago. As you read my bio.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what else do I need to put in?
Right. There?
So I'm a songwriter. I'm signed to Sony ATV as a songwriter. And then I'm an independent artist, which means that I just release music on my own, outsource my own companies, and own my own business. Really my songwriting journey began when I was in high school. Music has always been big in my family. Both of my parents were music majors. So my mom was a vocal major and basically raised me singing like since I was in her womb. And then my dad was an engineering major and ended up doing a lot of work in the music industry. So I just like grew up with music everywhere. And started writing songs in high school. And then when I went to college I went to DePaul University in Chicago for a while and then ended up getting a record deal with an indie label and moving to Nashville. And I think throughout the course of my songwriting, you know, music has always really been something that has helped me through my own battles and through my own struggles. I've struggled with depression. I was recently diagnosed with bipolar 3, which is a new thing called cyclothymia, which is like super fun. And difficult to diagnose. So I think throughout those experiences, as well as being addicted to alcohol and cocaine for a number of years, and having dealt with some trauma early on in my life, as many people with these issues have as well, music has always been something that has been very cathartic for me, and it's been very therapeutic for me. So being able to focus what I'm doing as a songwriter around these issues in a really direct way has been, you know, it's like peeling back layers, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think there's something about your lyrics that get kind of into the bloodstream of not just a catchy tune, but what you're actually trying to get through the day and deal with. At least that's what I found. There's one called I Am Enough, and it's about self-worth. And I just think that's kind of the bottom line of it all. I think no better time than now, when we're in the middle of an epidemic, for anyone to come out with lyrics like these.
I agree. And I'm really, thank you for that. And like, I mean, for me, it was like, I had to get to a point to where I could even like figure out that was at the root of it. You know, I think a lot of people don't even realize that they struggle with self-worth and what that really means, and what that really does to the psyche. And so I'm very excited to be releasing that song this year. And to get back to your question about the song Somebody Someone, which honestly kind of launched my artist platform into this world, like for good and for sure, you know, because this was always something that I've written about, but not in such a direct way. And when I put Somebody Someone out, it was the first time as an artist that I had really embraced my situation. It's a, you know, it's an autobiographical song about my brother who has also struggled with these issues and has been, you know, homeless and in and out of jail. And it's been, he's, you know, had to endure a lot of hardships because of, in my opinion, you know, the stigma and fear surrounding these issues, which causes most people to not want to seek treatment or get help.
Right.
So, you know, the pain and suffering of my brother and of my family through what has been, you know, a decade of some really, for lack of better terminology, crazy shit.
Yeah.
Really is what, you know, drove me to write the song. And then putting it out was a whole nother ballgame, because I hadn't, you know, to kind of put myself out on that ledge. And then also, you know, I had to, you know, talk to my family about it as well. And at first, you know, honestly, like when the song first came out, I hadn't talked to my brother in, you know, maybe a year and a half. And I made sure when I did interviews and everything that I never talked about the song in terms of it actually being about someone. And I remember about a year and a half ago when I finally saw him and played him the song, you know, we were both very emotional and crying, and he was very grateful and apologetic about everything, which, you know, obviously I was like, don't be sorry, like your journey has helped so many people through a similar situation. And so now I feel like it's really important to share, like, you know, that this is really a real thing that happens all the time, and that so many people are touched by. So I'm really glad the song is still continuing to be shared in these spaces and with families that need to hear it.
Well, I can tell you it's absolutely become almost our anthem. You know, and just my family has been touched by a lot of addiction. I have a mother who is still active in addiction, but she's kind of a little church lady anomaly. And then my son is 6 years out of in recovery. He's in recovery now, but he had a 6 year addiction to opiates that drove him to living out of a car and being homeless and living in a dugout for a while. I know exactly what it's like. So when the first time I heard this song, I was so gripped by it because in just a few short verses, you absolutely sum up what a family goes through. And that, you know, I always tell people when you see shaming comments online or in the media, it doesn't really hurt the person out there in addiction as much as it hurts the families, because we're going through this for the most part sober. And there's a sort of a dynamic I call secondhand shame involved, where we're taking that on even more and trying to protect the privacy of this person who's kind of out there in more of a cavalier way in the behavior. So you really summed it up. I mean, even from the beginning of it, where it says, I can't bring myself to meet, you know, with somebody with a cardboard sign. That is so very true. And we're seeing so many more of these people out there now with backpacks and cardboard signs and sometimes a dog. And so often you go by and you don't want to make that eye contact. And then you go on to say, I'd give you this money if I thought you'd use it for what you need. I mean, this is, I don't know how you came up with these lyrics that touch every deep point in the situation when it comes to what we're seeing in our culture.
Yeah, thanks for that. I mean, it's literally, it happens. I mean, like every day, it's just, you know, and it's just, you know, I think that my experiences with that are shared by everybody who passes someone who's homeless on the street. And it's like, you know, what can you do to help those people? Well, the best thing we can do is to talk about it and remove the stigma surrounding these issues so that family members can talk openly with other people about it without feeling like they're embarrassing their other family members. If this wasn't such a shameful thing, and people were looking at this from more of a perspective of trauma and mental health and, you know, as a medical condition. And, you know, I mean, people aren't embarrassed to say that their brothers have, you know, if my brother had cancer, that wouldn't be that big, you know. It's basically the same thing as saying that someone has, you know, an illness or any physical illness.
It really is.
That until our society really can overcome the stigma obstacle, nothing is going to change.
Yeah, and it's hard to overcome something you haven't been personally touched by. And it isn't the same exact disease as a child that has leukemia or your mom or dad taken from cancer, but it's a disorder and it takes over the brain. And that argument is kind of a moot point at this point in life, because we're in an epidemic. And if arguing about that or shaming people were a solution, we would not be in an epidemic that's not slowing down. So.
Right.
My son's last relapse, well, he's been in recovery about 6 years. So it was really bad at first and it was a slow start. And when I started approaching it more that when he would relapse, not taking it so personal, like, oh, you failed again and how could you? And you were doing so well and you know better, but more like you got sick again. You got sick again. So now, you know, what do we do to get you back on your feet again? And that started giving him momentum and support and strength to keep it up.
Yep. And I think when you take out the personal and shame factor for the people who are actually living that and going through that and experiencing the addiction, like you said, it taking themselves out of the equation and looking at it from a sheerly physical, physiological perspective really can help all the way around.
Right.
And more, I think that's starting to be the case, you know, but I think it is about literally just, you know, I think artists, people, and anybody with a political or public, you know, platform who can start to really break down those walls, I think we're just going to start seeing the change come. It's just going to come, you know, organically and naturally if we can just, you know, beat the stigma.
Yeah, and I definitely think that's happening and people are organizing and kind of uniting and putting programs in place to get in front of it a little more than trying to figure out and argue and look down on the situation. I mean, there's still a lot of that, but I think change is coming because it's in every family. I mean, you know,
it's not socioeconomic. It's not, you know, there's nothing, every single demographic is affected by mental health and addiction.
Right. So like even, you know, I didn't realize that you had had your own recovery story yourself. Did that give you better understanding into maybe what your brother's struggling with?
Absolutely. I mean, for sure. And yeah, so it'll be 3 years for me in March, which is
awesome.
You know,
awesome.
It's flown by. I think the first year is always really hard, and then the time just flies by because you start having fun.
Okay.
Yeah, so I really do. And I think also, you know, the support from my fans and from my family and friends, you know, when the song came out, and just seeing how many other people were going through the same thing, and just like the sheer amount of response, you know, that was everything for me in terms of like support to get myself to a better place and be healthy. And, yeah, so it's been a really cool, like, reciprocal relationship that I've gotten to have with so many of my fans, and I've created a support book on Facebook, and I'm actually in the process of opening a nonprofit and creating a separate, outside of, you know, the social media, but it will basically be a support group and a volunteer network for people who are, you know, just looking to get involved and find some ways to help out with these issues, and maybe people looking for resources and trying to connect with other people in their communities.
Yeah, and know, like, but people actually care. And then once you start to recover, that you can extend that, because that's kind of what keeps it flowing.
Yeah, and it's also, I see the foundation as, you know, funding things like sober living establishments, because a lot of the issues for my brother was finding, especially getting out of jail and having a felony, was finding a sober living environment, because a lot of apartments don't rent to people who have felonies, and the halfway houses are awful. And well, a lot of them are, not all of them, but some of them are.
Yeah.
And the living spaces that you end up in are just pull you right back into the place where you started. So I really want to, you know, I think if we had places for people to live and actually get healthy, it would just change the world.
You know, one added part that I always mention to people that helps my son continue momentum is that when drugs get in and they change all those parts of the brain, one of the places they kind of latch onto and infect are the goal center, the things that set goals. And one thing that's always helped him when I would say, you know, how do you, you know, in the early days, I asked a lot more of these questions. Now I kind of let him just continue on, because I don't want to get sick in that realm again. But when I would say, what's going to keep you from relapsing? And what if you get weak? Or what if an event happens and you're like, well, screw it, I just will. And he would always say, when I feel complacent or something happens, we have this goal process. So I'll set a goal. And it's when you kind of maneuver through goals and kind of focus forward, because it doesn't take that long for a moment of weakness to pass, and you either give in or you don't. So he would have a goal in place. And I think sometimes I've seen sober livings have situations set up where they take people kayaking and whitewater rafting and help them sign up for 5Ks or take classes, and having a goal place program in place. I think there's something powerful to that.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And that has been, yeah, definitely. And that's something that's, I mean, I think that works really for anything that you're dealing with. You know, it's all about just where you are now and where you're going.
Right. Reset those goals.
Yeah. And also confidence, you know, like giving people those experiences really boosts self-esteem and confidence. And then, like you were saying, it goes back to self-worth and like feeling like you deserve those things, and like you deserve to be healthy, and like you deserve to be happy. Because I think we're in a society where self-sabotage is, you know, just a daily occurrence that people struggle with, whether it's weight issues, health issues, addiction, interpersonal relationships. Just making healthy choices in general has become, you know, a big struggle, and really the focus of a lot of industries, especially in like the health and wellness space. In that industry, you know, it's really just trying to help people make healthy choices for themselves, and doing so from a place of self-worth, you know?
Yeah, because you deserve.
A lot of people struggle because no one feels like they deserve it. Yeah,
right. You deserve it
because of the media and because of the commercials, and so then people just feel like shit about themselves. So they're just like, well, fuck it. You know?
Right. Well, that's what I always have said. There's two kind of positions that either somebody who's been active takes or the family member takes. And the person who's been active is like, screw it. I'll just do it. Why not? I just give up. And then the family member is like, screw that. I am not doing that with my life. And they both kind of lock horns and neither understand each other.
Right. Totally.
So I think we're like making progress with conversations like these. And, I want to just come back. I wrote down a couple of things from your song because I'm obsessed with it. And I always introduce people to it. One of the things I love is in the chorus and when it talks about how you're still someone's brother and son and mother and someone's missing you where you came from. I love that because people lose their identity when they collapse into addiction or they're out there. They lose that identity, but that's still a fact. You're still somebody's son or daughter. That's still, and you, somebody's missing that person. I love that you highlighted that.
Thank you. It's then, so true though. I mean, I feel like, and for the years that my brother, you know, was missing or absent, and it was like, you know, he didn't really understand that. And he didn't, I feel like he didn't feel like we cared or that, you know, it's also the other thing that I really wanted to highlight was that when you see these people on the street, people forget that they have a family. And people also, you know, often make assumptions like, oh, he came from a shitty family that doesn't right. care about him. Or she came from a poor background and probably never had a chance or something like that, where it's like, no, actually, a lot of the time, it's just the fact that, you know, when you're dealing with addiction, you literally can't do anything about it unless the person will get well. And it becomes a matter of safety and boundaries and financial, you know, distress when someone is struggling with those issues and won't get help. Yeah. And when there's nothing you can do. And that helpless feeling is like what I feel because I've been through it when I see a homeless person. That helpless feeling is what I feel for the family of whoever yeah. that, you know. And I don't feel like enough people feel that when they look at a homeless person. Right. They just feel like, you know.
Bothered.
Bothered or like it's their fault.
Yeah.
Like it's the homeless person's fault. You know, there's a lot of blame just put in the wrong places. I think if people blamed, you know, more of just how the media portrays these issues and blamed society more than just blaming a person, because this isn't a problem. This isn't about the people who are homeless. It's about society.
Right. It's about community and the loss of community and this person's detachment from community and its positive regard from community, whether it's a mutual aid society like a 12-step program or something else. It's not one size fits all for anyone to recover, but it's community that will restore them again because it's really yeah. about connection.
Exactly.
You know, it's interesting. About a few years before any of this even happened with my son, I had a friend who he and his wife were involved in trafficking and they had this big ministry. And I remember asking them what their biggest challenge was in getting people to help them and support them. And the wife told me, my biggest challenge is that people believe when somebody's out there trafficking themselves or being trafficked, that it's because they want to. And because I can't get past the point that they don't want to, they fell into it or got trapped into it or tricked or is similar to addiction. However it came to be, you're now trapped. And she couldn't get people past the opinion that that's what they want to be, that's who they are, so that they would then want to support this person and start to give them some worth back.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's I think what we're overcoming when we're trying to untangle from the stigma and help bring about solution.
Yep, absolutely.
So what has been the reaction from, you know, as this song has gotten bigger and your work has gotten bigger and that's all a part of it. How's your family reacting and responding now when people come with questions?
Well, my family doesn't, you know, my family doesn't really have to, you know, answer any questions or anything. So I don't, I, you know, keep that pretty separate, but, in terms of, you know, what I'm doing, it's really been great to, you know, as an artist, I've always just wanted to make music that makes a difference for people and connects with people. And for me to be able to write something that's like truly from my heart and soul and have people really connect with it, but also for it to lift people up and, you know, do some good in the world has been amazing. And it's really changed, you know, because I write a lot of songs at Sony. I write songs for other artists and I write songs for film and TV, and I do different genres and like different, you know, subject matter. And to have my artist thing and like what I'm actually releasing as my artist brand to the world be focused on this stuff is like a dream come true. It's been, you know, kind of difficult. I think the initial like reaction and response to kind of like step into that role, you know, because yeah. I'm just a person at the end of the day, just like everybody else dealing with this stuff. And to like have, you know, people sending these stories and photos and reaching out and wanting to talk was initially very overwhelming, you know,
yeah.
But I think, and it took me a little bit because at the same time I was like, you know, in recovery myself and navigating that. But, you know, I think it's really been cool over the last year and a half for me to really kind of be able to, now that I'm in a healthier place too, you know, and I feel very rooted in my sobriety and in my mental health and all that, to be able to like give it back and pay it forward.
Yeah. And how do you, what do you do to kind of continue your momentum? Cause it has been said to my son in the past, you know, he's done so well for so long, but that thing's kind of lurking. It doesn't have to be like a daily scary monster, but it's probably doing push-ups somewhere, just waiting for an opportunity. So, you know, you have to at least be mindful of it and remember and have healthier things in place. So I'm just curious, what's your wellness regimen?
Sure. Well, I have a therapist and I do acupuncture. I also eat very clean. I'm super into like health and nutrition. So I work out, which is like my basically religion, you know. I'm not a very religious person, but I'm spiritual and, you know, I like to feel connected to my body, which is connected to, you know, the world and the universe. And I think working out for me and yoga really helped me to achieve that sense of belonging and that sense of connection. So those are very important things for me. And then, you know, obviously like I get to write and release music that, you know, helps other people. And I think that if I didn't do what I did, volunteering would be a huge, you know, I volunteer when I can, but more often than not, I'm, you know, trying to play shows in spaces where it's beneficial to people, you know, like I'm doing a lot of recovery shows this year, performing in those spaces and trying to create some videos, especially around the new releases, like I Am Enough, that will have a big impact on people to make people really, you know, think about these things. And those things, honestly, in and of themselves, really keep me going and keep me sober.
You know, as far as family member, and I'm sure your family could relate, and you, and to some degree, and I know as a mom, when you try to figure out what it is that gives somebody that aha moment, I think that's where as family, we kind of go crazy because we want them to have rock bottom, or we want to make things easier and remove stress, but you don't know what it's going to take for anyone to get it. They just kind of have to get it. Some people will say it's rock bottom. Some people say in a moment they realize. So it's different for everyone. Mm-hmm. Do you know what it was specifically that helped you want to get healthier?
Yeah, it was a moment where I hurt the people around me in my life by making bad decisions. And there was like a 6-month period of time where I was just really going at it. You know, I was just really using hard and drinking really, really heavily and putting myself in debt and making decisions that just weren't me. And seeing, and you know, I think more than anything, knowing the feeling of helplessness with my brother, and then seeing that same feeling like happen to the people that love me, but about me, was like, oh, I can't do this to them. Like, I have to, I think the biggest thing you can do, you know, for the people that you love and care about is take care of yourself for them so that they don't worry, you know? And I think that that was like my moment, you know, 3 years ago when I was just like, well, I can't, I don't want them to, you know, think about me that way and be worried about me. It's just not me. Like, I've always been a rock, and like, I don't ever want to, you know, inflict that pain on someone else. So
yeah, I mean, it's interesting how it's different for everyone, and that's a good way to kind of wake up to where you don't have to wake up, you know, in jail. It takes something different for everyone. So I'm always kind of curious about that, because I
think, I mean,
family, we want to figure that out.
I've woken up in hospitals and woken up in, you know, when I was in high school, I was not in a great way and often got like arrested for stupid, you know, kid stuff, but it led to bigger things. And, you know, anyways, I'm glad I didn't have to hit like rock bottom,
right.
For sure. And I feel for the people that do.
My son and I have a saying with each other, and it's because we went to some event when he was a kid and the speaker kept saying, keep on keeping on. And I love that you have a song called that. And it talks about how those you love keep you keeping on. I just was kind of curious how that one came about.
Yeah. I mean, that was really about that struggle to keep on keeping on. And it's like the whole one day at a time, you know, but that saying is something that I've always, you know, said to myself, and the people that I love in my life are the ones that keep me keeping on. And those are the ones that I keep keeping on for, you know, those are the ones that when I was, you know, when I went sober, it was, you know, it was for me, but it was also for them too, you know?
Yeah. And that gives great peace and relief to the family. Believe me. You have another one called Every Step of the Way. I love that as well, because it seems to me that one's about trust.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually wrote that with John Oates from Hall & Oates, and he sings and plays the guitar in the song. And we actually met. It was really weird the way we met, but he came up to me and wrote his number down on a napkin and was like, hey, do you want to write some songs? And I was like, okay, John Oates. Because he's a legend, and I'm like, you know, I'm a huge fan, so.
It's got such a great sound to it, too. Everyone needs to look these songs up and follow your music, because it's so good. It kind of gets in your brain.
Thank you very
much. And it's so encouraging and relatable. And then I want to get back to, you know, that with someone, it ends with, we're all still missing you. Because a lot of people still have family still out there, and they don't know, you know, you never know what could happen in a day. And I remember being in a meeting once and saying, and asking the therapist there, how am I going to do this for 5 years? How am I going to feel like this and worry the rest of this year? And what if this goes on for 10 years? And she said, you don't have to do it for a year or 5 years or even 10 years. You just have to do it today. And then tomorrow, you might have to do it tomorrow, but you don't even have to yet. You just have to do it today. So that said, are you in contact with your brother now?
Yes, actually, he's been doing the best that he's been in like a decade. He got out of jail about 8 months ago and has had a job and has been sober. And so I've been out to visit him a couple times, and, you know, slowly we are, you know, hoping that he can maintain, you know, his path. But he seems more like himself than he has in 10 years, and it's been like bittersweet, because you want to just pick up where you left off, but there's been so much, you know, pain and trauma that has happened in the last decade. So it's like, you know, boundaries are there for a reason, and you have to, you know, you can't, I think the healthiest relationships are the ones that respect boundaries on both sides. And I think that he needs boundaries from us, and I think we need boundaries from him, and we talk about that. And I think his, you know, level of communication and has, you know, I think he obviously took advantage of the counseling services when he was in jail, and he's been communicating, you know, in a really respectful way, and we've just been getting on really well. So there's always that, you know, kind of hesitancy to like go all the way in though, you know, like, but at the end of the day, you know, he's my bro and I'll always love him no matter what. So
I remember someone asking me when my son started doing well again, well, how will you ever trust him again? And I really had to dive into that and wonder. And I started thinking, you know, what a miserable process this would be if he had to rebuild trust to the point that it was broken. So really, my job is to love him and forgive him, protect the areas with boundaries and wisdom that were violated. But I'm not requiring him to pay back a trust bank. You know, certainly trust has to be earned, but I trust myself, my intuition. I trust working on myself. If I'm healthy and wise and not making decisions that are, you know, dropping my guard or compromising things. So that's our relationship.
I totally agree with that. And I love that because it's more about trusting yourself and not putting that on the other person.
Right.
And not setting yourself, not setting them up for failure and not setting them up to be a distrustworthy person, you know?
Yeah. Where they have to like, it's failing if they fail you.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
makes it more about you and like, you know, letting me down and all of that stuff is so toxic, especially in a relationship with someone who is recovering.
Right.
And it's not healthy for them either, you know?
Right. And I, you know, I attend a lot of meetings. I work a program as a recovering family member just to stay sane and to move out of PTSD and all of these issues. So oftentimes I hear somebody come in and they're new to the situation and they're so angry about being lied to. And they're just, you see this anger on their face and they're like, well, I wouldn't lie and, you know, I'll never trust you again. And you really have to work through the fact that it's a symptom of this, mm-hmm. just like a fever to a flu. And it's really not about you. It's really not about you. It's really about what they had to do in the midst of sickness. So you have to come back and kind of detach from all of that, forgive and get healthy.
Yep.
At least that's what worked for us. So tell us everything coming up for you, because I know you have some exciting stuff that you've doing and that you've traveled and done, and tell us all what's going on.
Yeah. Well, I've got some new music coming out this year, in the process of kind of making the visual content for it and talking to my team about how we want to release it. And we did a crowdfunding campaign over the holidays for it and got the funding to, you know, make all the music, which is amazing. And so basically just kind of focusing on that. And then I think as we're releasing the music, I'll book some shows and do some live events around the releases. And also, you know, moving forward pretty quickly with the support group and the nonprofit to try and start using the music to bring people together for that purpose and for that cause, for the sober living environment, and also for the volunteer opportunities and resources for people looking for them. And so that's kind of like, you know, I'm meeting with a lot of people in the medical and healthcare industry to figure out the best way to make that, you know, something that's really useful for people, because I want it to be, you know, I want it to be super useful and very helpful. And I think the music is one aspect of, you know, a lot of things that need to happen. So I'm excited and certainly, you know, not bored.
Right. And I think your music is making a powerful impact and I hope it continues. Tell all of our listeners so we can support you how to connect to your work.
Oh, thank you. You can find me on iTunes, on Spotify. My website is DaphneWillis.com. I have a support group on Facebook called the Daphne Willis Support Group, AKA Freaks Like Me.
Oh,
and we'll be starting the Freaks Like Me Foundation this year, and that will also be coming out. If you want updates for what's happening with the foundation, just go to DaphneBillis.com and you can sign up for my newsletter, which comes out once a month.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And we wish all the success and recovery and joy to you, your brother, your family, your music. I can't thank you enough for coming on. And I want all of our listeners to tune into your stuff and to support you as much as possible, because it's not an easy thing to open up and share on such a public level and to do it with such raw honesty and sincerity while you're in the midst of dealing with things yourself. So that said, I cannot support you enough. So, and thank you a million times for coming on.
Thank you, Annie. Well, thank you for what you're doing. I mean, it's truly a blessing. And I can speak for all your listeners when we say we appreciate it. So
thank you so much. And until next time, bye-bye.
You have been listening to the Unhooked Podcast. Views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this episode by the guests belong solely to the guests and do not necessarily reflect those of the host or any affiliated organization or institution. Annie's books, Unhooked and Unbroken, can be found on Amazon, Cokesbury, BarnesandNoble.com, and wherever books are sold. You can find her work by searching Annie Highwater on Facebook. If you have enjoyed the Unhooked Podcast, please subscribe, share, and leave a 5-star review. We hope you'll keep coming back to listen to the Unhooked Podcast.